Welcome to the Australian Hiker Podcast, Australia's longest running hiking podcast, downloaded over 1 million times worldwide and providing you with an Australian perspective on all things hiking. We're your hosts, Tim and Jill Savage, coming to you from Ngunnawal and Ngambri country.
This is episode 284 of the Australian Hiker Podcast. And in this week's episode, we bring you the first of our 2024 annual industry interview podcast. Before we get into today's episode, if you'd like to help support Australian Hiker and this podcast, there are a couple of ways that you can help us out. Firstly, by subscribing on your podcast host of choice so that each episode is available as soon as it's published. And if you have the opportunity, leave us a five-star review. Another way to support us is go to the Australian Hiker website at www.australianhiker.com.au and click on the support us page and buy us a coffee. You can do a one-off donation or become a monthly supporter. All donations are greatly appreciated and help us to continue producing this podcast and blog. Now let's get on to today's episode. In the past week, Jill and I spent time down in Melbourne attending the annual industry trade show. This show tends to vary from location to location. Last year it was Sydney, this year is Melbourne, and next year I believe it's going to be Brisbane. Just to sort of provide a bit of fairness to the industry so people don't have to travel to the same city over and over. For us, we started attending these trade shows in 2017, and with the exception of 2020 and 21, where the shows didn't happen due to the COVID pandemic, we have been fairly keen to get down there to see what's been going on and what the trends in the industry are like. One of the things we've progressively noticed over the last couple of years is that not everyone is attending these shows face-to-face. They're choosing to do things slightly differently. So you'll find that some of these interviews have been done at Melbourne at the trade show, while others have been done remotely by phone with suppliers that we know fairly well, and they've certainly provided us the information and the images to help give us a good idea of what's going on. Next week's episode, part two, we'll finish off the remainder of these interviews, and then we'll also talk more specifically about what the overall trends are in the outdoor industry and where we see the outdoor hiking side of things going in the next few years. We hope you enjoy. For this interview, we're talking to Greg from Spelion, who, amongst other things, stocks the ranges of Thermarest, MSR, Petzl, and a number of other brands, too many to mention. But the first range we're going to talk about is the GSI Outdoor range. So, Greg, thanks for taking the time to chat with us.
You're welcome. Thank you. I thought I'd just start today with talking about some new products that are available for 2024. What we do have is a bunch of cook sets that have always come with a Teflon-coated non-stick coating, and this year they've updated it to a ceramic coating. So the ceramic coating is a much tougher coating, more scratch resistant, and they're doing that across all their range. So all the ones that were just plain Teflon coated before now come with a ceramic coating.
Okay, and what's the advantage of a ceramic coating?
So the ceramic coating is its durability. So it's a lot tougher. It'll last a lot longer. So opposed to it being scratching with some of your utensils, it's just something that'll actually last a lot longer and is a lot tougher.
Okay, no, that's great. And I think for GSI, I mean, for me, the thing I love about GSI, the one particular product I like is the soft-handled, long-handled spoon, which has been my spoon of choice for many years. And I'm assuming they're still producing that one, are they?
Yeah, they are. So it's, as you say, long-handled, so it gets into your dehydrated food pouches very well and can scrape all the way down the bottom. It comes with a softer silicon base on the end of the spoon, so it can, you know, scrape right down through the bottom of those packets.
I actually had to replace mine over the last 12 months because when I was hiking the South Coast track in Tasmania, I left mine outside the tent right next to my head, and in the morning it was gone.
Some animal had taken it.
Yeah, I think I worked it out by the end of the trip. It was a spotted quoll because I saw a spotted quoll on another campsite, and they do have a reputation for rifling through anything outside the tent, and they obviously like the taste of silicon.
Definitely. Definitely. A couple of other new products we've got is some folding spoons and forks. These are made out of stainless steel, but a very light, lightweight, thin stainless steel, so they're nice and tough, but they fold up, so they're nice and compact, so can fit into some smaller 1 to 2 person pot sets as well, so they're not taking up a lot of room.
Okay, no, they do certainly look like some small. What are they like weight wise?
So weight wise, you're looking at around 30 grams each, and you can get the spoon or the fork.
Okay, that's good. Okay, so the next range we're going to look at from Spelion is the Crazy Creek range. Now, it's a name that I have heard, but I couldn't tell you why. So what do Crazy Creek do? And it's obvious to me looking here at the moment, but what do they do and what are they known for?
So Crazy Creek are known for small, lightweight, collapsible chairs. They're legless chairs, so they are for purchasing sitting on the ground, but they are small enough that they will either fold flat and you can strap to your backpack, or even roll up and strap to your backpack as well. There's a whole different range from ones that are about a centimetre thick of closed cell foam that do collapse. They just fold flat like together. And then there's other ones that are about half a centimetre thick, and that's their hex chair, which do actually roll up. So they roll up to, about the size of a loaf of bread, a little bit thinner than a loaf of bread, but about that.
There's certainly some colourful colours as well.
Yeah, so you can get any sort of colour from rainbow, motley tie-dye looking ones to olive, blacks, blues, greens, reds, and so you can certainly have your colour of choice. And the beauty about all the chairs is that they do offer good insulation, so on the ground, on those wet logs, on the stones, rocks, anywhere that you are, and offer a really, really good base for you to sit on. And it doesn't have to just be when you're outdoors camping. If you do need to take them on a picnic or down the beach or somewhere like that, they're a great advantage for that.
Okay, now they certainly look good, and particularly that tie-dye one down there is very, very retro pattern on it.
Yeah. So that's their adventure line, and that's part of their original chair. And their original chair is the one that started it all. You essentially sit in the chairs, and then there's two buckles on each side, and you cinch those down, and that'll just collapse the chair up for you to sit in snugly. You can lean back with confidence that you won't fall back. They also do some in what they call a long back, so people that are a little bit taller want a little bit more support at their back. You can actually have something that is a long back and support you at the back there.
Okay. And now, are these available now, or they're just coming into the stores?
So these are available now. You'll find them at a number of stores right around Australia, and all you need to do is ask for the Crazy Creek chairs.
Okay, no, that's great. Okay, so now we're looking at MSR gear, and we've got a MSR Hubba Hubba bike pack tent.
So the legendary MSR Hubba Hubba tent, which has been around for a number of years, offers a great lightweight backpacking tent. But there was certainly demand for people who do bikepacking, and they're looking for a tent that they could take bikepacking. MSR redesigned this using aluminium DAC poles, making them in a shorter length so that they fold up nice and they can fit on a handlebar of a bike, that the whole tent itself is nice and light. Its minimum weight of the one person is about 1 kilo, and the two person is about 1.5 kilos.
Yep.
And otherwise it offers all the same great features that a Hubba Hubba does offer, which is drip free doors, good ventilation, and a nice lightweight inner and outer.
So the main difference looking at it between this and the standard hiking-based Hubba Hubba is more the size it packs down to because of the pole structure.
That's exactly right. The current version of the Hubba series, or Hubba Hubba series, has what they call cyclone poles. They're a little bit longer, and so they went to the back to the aluminium DAC pole, which is and they can shorten the length of those.
Okay, and this is available again in the stores at the moment, or
so,
not yet?
This will be available in probably about 4 weeks' time.
Yep.
We have stock en route.
Okay, so roughly around about the end of March, maybe into early April, so probably either just before or just after Easter.
Yeah, correct. You'll certainly see a little bit of promotion hitting stores and on media about this, because we have stock on the way, and so it won't be long.
Okay. And if those people listening, if you have a look on the show notes for this podcast, we'll have a picture of the Hubba Hubba tent on a bike just to show you how short it does pack down to. Okay, so now we're going to look at the platypus range. And for me, I tend to use platypus soft water bottles, and I've also got a platypus gravity feed filter. So what's new for platypus this year?
What's new for this year is they've updated their quick draw filter, which is their small single personal use filter that they say it's a one filter for every adventure. It's designed to be used where you can get a source of water in a dirty or a bladder that's dirty, and essentially you can squeeze it and you can get up to 3 litres a minute by pushing it through. What they have done this year is that they've updated it so that they all include a different cap at the bottom, so you can, rather than just have an opening at the top which you can drink from, you can remove it and you can add the other connection, which will allow you to connect it to a lot of hydration systems as well.
So when as an example, if I buy a gravity feed filter, does it come with the two different types of tops on it, or is that an optional extra?
The gravity fed ones come with only the top, which is designed to screw on a bottle.
Yep.
The quick draw itself, the personal filter, it'll come with both.
Okay, so if you want to be a bit more versatile, buy the quick draw and use it for bladder or use it for bottle.
Yep, correct.
Okay, yep. That's a good idea. I mean, it allows people that use water bottles as their water carrying supply quite well, or if you want to filter a large amount of water. So looking at the filters here, we've got 1 litre, 2 litre and 3 litre size bags.
Yeah, that's correct.
And you're saying what, about 3 litres per minute?
That's roughly? Correct, yes.
So potentially it's only take, depending on how dirty the water is, it's only taking about a minute to actually filter that much water.
And that's squeezing it as well. If you're letting it just gravity feed feed naturally, it'll take a little bit longer. Yeah.
I know certainly from ours, so when we've done groups of even just two people or three people, using a gravity feed is a much better way than trying to filter per person in a bottle or something like that.
Exactly. The quick draw filter this year is it used to just come in blue, but they've upped to a few colours this year, so you can personalise your filtration system to olive, orange and pink, as well as the blue.
Yep.
And these will be available come May, June this year.
Now, with the filtration units on these, I'm guessing they're designed to filter out bacteria and cysts, I suppose, rather than viruses?
Correct. It's not a microfilter. Sorry, it's not a purifier. It's only a microfilter. And so, yes, as you say, all those it'll filter out, but it won't filter out viruses. Viruses will still need to be deactivated by an addition of a purification solution.
Yeah. So now we're going on to Petzl. Now, we talked about Petzl quite a lot last year when they released quite a new overhaul to their range. This year, not so much new, but there are some new models within the range. So what's new from Petzl at the moment?
So for Petzl for 2024, they've updated a model called the Swift RL. The Swift RL is a running head torch, camping head torch that has reactive lighting. Used to have an output of up to 900 lumens last year, but this year it now has an output of 1100 lumens, so a little bit brighter. And also an update with the model is they've changed the charging cable from a micro USB to the more current USB-C charging cable. And besides those little things, that they've had a tweak the model a little bit by updating the locking function on the top switch, so it'll stay locked when it's on your bag, just make it a little bit more secure.
And with the what sort of batteries can you use in this torch?
So the Swift RL, it uses its own rechargeable battery, and you would need to purchase a spare battery if you wanted to run a backup from that.
Okay, but could you use just standard AAAs or AAs, or
It is just that one. So for the what Petzl have in their other range, their hybrid range, you can certainly use either their core rechargeable battery or the AAA battery, so you can use both. But with the Swift RL, it only has one unique battery that must be used for that head torch.
Okay, and can you buy spare batteries if you want to go all night long and just keep on recycling them?
Yes, you can. You can. So some people certainly do. They'll have a spare battery, and when they change it out, they'll then have a rechargeable pack or rechargeable battery pack that they then feed to essentially charge that spare battery up again.
Okay, so we've been talking to Greg Ford from Spelion about the very large range of well-known gear that they carry. Thanks for taking the time to chat with us.
Thanks, Tim.
Now, we've gone through and talked to the company Spelion, who is the importer and distributor of MSR, as well as a number of other products like Platypus and Therm-a-Rest and Petzl. So they're fairly well-known brands that people will be aware of. Now, it's interesting, in talking to Greg, one of the comments he made was that the industry seems to have come to a cycle of every 2 year releases. For a number of years, we went through a stage of having product released every year. It makes it hard for the retailers to try and keep track of, for wholesalers to manage stock, and even for the end user to think, well, I just bought a new range last year. Do I really need a new one?
And yeah, I think it's a good development to sort of skip a year because, I mean, as you said, you don't need to replace things every year. But the other thing is that if it's only, you know, minor changes or minor improvements, it doesn't quite make sense, and it's certainly not sustainable from an environmental perspective.
So in relation to things like Petzl, there's only one new headlamp this year, and they've gone through and they've brought out a new light, which is a fairly powerful light. And again, we're hoping to be testing that one over the next couple of months. And this is one of the lights they've gone through and put a rechargeable battery in. Now, at the moment, it's not a replaceable chargeable battery. The battery and the back cover of the headlamp are all one unit. But it's a USB-C fitting, whereas previously the changes to the lights have always been the mini USBs. So as things change and try and standardize, bringing out the new range of this is the first, I'm assuming, is probably the first in a number of ranges that will come through changing over to the USB fitting as a standard. So again, their lights, you know, they cosmetically they've changed, and they've changed a few new functions, but the big change with headlamps seems to be an improvement in quality and length of batteries. So, you know, these headlamps are getting more powerful and more powerful and getting longer lifespans, which means that if you are a serious runner or a serious hiker that's doing some unfamiliar full-on night hiking for long periods, these are a good way to go. And I must admit, I've got the little Petzl E-Light, which is the tiny little 27-gram light, which I tend to use more for an around camp light, or I'm using it for when I know I'm not going to be night hiking. But when I do know that I'll be going through and doing night hiking, particularly in unfamiliar areas, I tend to change my light and go to one of the more powerful ones that give me a good lot of visibility, particularly when you're not familiar with that area at all. MSR, they have gone through and bought out or starting to bring out a slightly their range of tents, and they've got a MSR Hubba Hubba bike packing version. Now, when you look at this tent, apart from the colouring of the fly, that's neither here nor there. It's more about the size of the poles. So with the standard Hubba Hubbas, the pole lengths are slightly, or the individual segments are slightly longer. But in the case of the bikepacking version, they've gone through and made the segments of the poles a bit smaller, which means that you can pack it down a bit smaller. And they had an example, and we'll show you the photos if you go online and have a look at the photos for this podcast, how short it is sitting across the handlebars of a bike.
And the one on the bike is actually a two-person tent. The photo that we've taken of the tent set up is a one-person tent. So, you know, even though it's a two-person, it is quite short and it is, quite packable.
The other thing that we noticed the change for this year, and probably more so than the last few years, was the Platypus range. And they've got a new range of filtration units that can be screwed onto a bottle but also can be used on a bladder. And they've updated their gravity filters with their filters and their bladders as well. Now, a lot of it's cosmetic, but it's also improving the flow that comes through and the speed in which you can go through and clean these clean water. So if you are into slightly larger groups, certainly a group of three people, for us, gravity filter is definitely the way to go. And even we have used the gravity filter on a two-person trip just because it's convenient. You hang it up, you let it drip dry, you can go about doing other things around the camp rather than having to sit there and squeeze the water through a filter. But the option is still there to go through and do that as well.
Okay, so for our next interview, we're here at the camper's pantry store talking to AJ. And we've talked to AJ for the last few years, and every year we come, there's always something new. So thanks for taking the time to chat with us, AJ, and tell us all about what's coming up the campus pantry in the coming year.
Yeah, thanks, Tim and Jill. Good to see you guys again. We've got some new meals that will be coming out soon, which we've got in the expedition packs. We've got five new flavours. We've got a red Thai chicken curry and a tuna pasta bake. We've got a creamy chicken pasta, a vegetarian pasta, and a green Thai chicken curry. So these are still cooked with real ingredients, clean ingredients, which is what we stick to. They're a true serve, so cooked up, they're 400 grams, so a good serving as well. In the expedition packet, so we vac form them and we nitrogen flush them, so they're nice and compact and ready to go for expedition travel. And then what we've done with this packaging is we've incorporated Tassie Trails on the underside of the cards. So each five meals will have a different trail to showcase from Tasmania. And this is a bit of a bucket list. It's a bit of a conversation starter. When you're in the hut, say if you're on the Bibbulmun track with your mates and you pull out one of our meals and you can start talking about getting on a plane, getting down to Tassie, and hiking the Frenchman's Cap. We've got the Walls of Jerusalem, South Coast Track, Overland Track, of course, and the Three Capes. And then we've also, and these trail maps are just basic, just to get people excited about getting on a hike and going down to Tassie. So the other thing that we've done is we've partnered with a few companies where we've got some tokens. So with the Overland Track, you obviously travel through Launceston to get on the trailhead. And in the heart of Lonnie, there's a new brewery down there, Duquesne Brewery. And Will, the brewer, and Sam, one of the owners, are very passionate hikers. And so the theme of the Duquesne brand is all about getting outside and getting on the trails. So there's trail map info in the brewery. And the little Overland Track map on there has a Duquesne beer token. So you can go through, get yourself a small beer off the tap, and then stay and have a wood-fired pizza. And then Three Capes, for instance, this one, you're flying into Hobart. So while you're going through Hobart, Van Diemen's Land Creamery, who we've partnered with the ice cream, they've got a little punt on the Salamanca waterfront there. So you can call through and get yourself a mini cone from there. And then we're going to partner with some other brands and have some interesting stuff going on there.
Okay, that's a good idea, and definitely it does encourage people and showcases trails that not every hiker may be aware of. Will you go through and take those little maps through for the rest of the range of the previous released products?
Yeah, we are. We're going to have a look at some trails on the mainland as well to promote hikes on the mainland. And then we're also looking at potentially swapping these out every so often and printing some Sudoku or some crosswords, maybe some Tassie trivia. So we've got plenty of ideas to keep people happy when they're sitting in the hut.
So you're taking over from the fantails.
Yeah, it's pretty much. Yeah, it's pretty much the same sort of concept, yeah.
All right, and I must admit, looking at those meals, I mean, I'm always a spice lover, and I know you said the spices aren't necessarily probably to the standard that I like, but I think having the range of curries looks really good, and the range of product, I think I'll definitely be keen to try those out and see what they're like. I think if they're anything like the previously released versions, they'll go really well.
Yeah, we tend to keep the salt and the spice quite low, due to the fact we want young families out on the trail. We want them to be able to hike with kids with underdeveloped palates. And as soon as you throw salt and spice in there, you can't take it out. So if you can carry some chili flakes and a little, you know, GSI spice missile or whatever they're called, those little, you know, and you can pimp up your hiking meal with a bit of bit of stuff on top and make it a bit more interesting than if that's your thing. I know you like yours super spicy.
No worries, that's great. Okay, and what else have we got to look forward to over the coming year?
We've had a pretty good run with the ice cream. Everyone's pretty stoked with that. So the pepperberry, leatherwood, the chocolate and the whiskey, they've all been, since our last show, we had them sampled at the last show. They're now in retail packaging. They're available in, we've got about 200 plus retailers now in Australia, and a lot of them are putting it in and having good results with it. So we've gone with three new flavours. So we'll have a range of ice cream, and the new flavours are cafe latte and a raspberry. And then we've also done a vegan choc, which is surprisingly unbelievable. So, and then the other, we're getting a lot of people sending us feedback now on how they're playing around with the ice cream. Obviously you just eat it straight out of the bag. It's like a violet crumble and it's crunchy. And as it rehydrates in your mouth, you get all those flavor hits, and then you get pieces stuck in your teeth. So 30 minutes after you've eaten it, you still can taste it. It's pretty incredible. So the whiskey cream, if you, with a single malt, that's Hellier's Road from Tassie as well in there. If you drop that into a double shot coffee, it's like an Irish coffee without the grog in it. The chocolate, we've had people send us feedback of putting that into a coffee and it's like a mocha, but also just having hot water with the chocolate turns it into a hot chocolate drink.
Okay.
And the pepperberry and leatherwood honey. So this one has got 14 awards now for Van Diemen's, the most awarded ice cream, so we had to put it in. The pepperberries are native to Tassie.
Yeah.
Very unique flavour. And then the leatherwood honey, so they cart the beekeepers cart the hives into the leatherwood forests, which are in World Heritage areas, and they do that when they're in flower, get the honey, and then they come out. So the honey is a really different flavour. So those, that combo, it's a savoury ice cream. It's a bit of a, you know, most people will go in and grab the chocolate, they'll love it, they'll go back in for their next hike, they'll grab the chocolate because they've had it and love it. They'll try the whiskey, and then the pepperberry is the last one. So the pepperberry is definitely the slowest seller, but we have a lot of people saying it's now their favourite.
Yeah, I must admit, I can't remember which order I liked them, but I certainly am a big fan of the pepperberry, and I'm used to it. I suppose for a lot of people who have never come across pepperberry before, it's probably, that's a weird flavour, but yeah, no, it's definitely a nice offering.
So we've been asked for a mashed potato option. So we've looked at a mashed potato option. We've played with flavours. We've got three options in the pipeline. There's a cheesy chive, which will probably just be the winner because it's delicious.
Yep.
And and then we're doing a black pepper and truffle, which is a little bit more gourmet. So if you're getting on the Three Capes track, perfect.
Yep.
But also for that crossover for people that are doing some touring around Australia and they're doing a steak on the fire and they can have a truffle mash without having to cut the potatoes, peel them, cut them, boil them up, mash them, clean up. So no clean up afterwards, so nice and simple. And then the other one will just be a plain potato mash with no dairy, so it'll suit dietary, it'll suit school groups as well.
Yeah, no, that sounds good.
The trail mix, we've had that out for a while in the larger packets. We're going to look at putting that into the smaller 100 gram packets, and that's in the pipeline for 2024. So we're just going through that as well. So just trying to create more things within the food category. So not just the dinners. We want to have people, you know, heading out there with something for lunch, something as a snack, something for dessert. Yeah, that experience on the mountain.
That sounds great. Okay, so we've been talking with AJ from Campers Pantry. Thanks very much for taking the time to chat with us.
Yeah, thanks, Tim. Thanks, Jill.
So that was our interview with AJ from Campers Pantry. As usual, they're always fairly proactive in bringing new product to the market. So this year in particular, we had some new flavours of ice cream, including a vegan chocolate ice cream, which I didn't get to try, but Jill did.
It was very nice and very good. And then there was the coffee one that was for you because you give up coffee for the hikes, or at least we both do. That was very tasty.
And I hadn't thought about this before, but apparently people have been using the ice cream and putting it into milk, making it into hot chocolate. I hadn't actually thought about that, but it does make sense. Rather than using powder, you just use the granules from the ice cream itself. So we're going to have to try that and see what it's like. So we've got some new flavours to test out, and we'll be releasing the reviews of those in the next couple of weeks. In addition, the Expedition range of meals, which they came out with early last year, and these were meals that have got a 5-year lifespan. They've got all the air has been pulled out of the meal, and they've been flushed with nitrogen, and that's how they part of the reason they end up with a 5-year lifespan. But it also makes for very small packaging. So rather than having packets like most dehydrated or freeze-dried meals do with have air inside them, these have nothing at all. And they're quite good in that respect, very, very compact. Now, we will bring you some reviews of those as they become available, but we've got 2 new curry dishes. We've got a couple of others as well. Now, in all honesty, I can't remember what they were, but the curries to me look fairly exciting, so it'll be interesting to see what they're like. We've always been big fans of Campus Pantry. They do use real meat in their product for those that aren't vegetarian meals, and they are very, very tasty. So I think these new range will be very promising for those hikers that do like a bit of variety in their overnight trips.
Okay, so next we're talking to Grant from Gerber, who produce an extremely large range of tools that are just behind me at the moment. So have a look on the show notes for this website just to see some of the products available and the product we're going to be talking to today. So Grant, thanks for taking the time to chat with us.
Thanks, Tim. It's great to be here.
All right, so first we're going to look at some of the smaller knives that are suitable for hikers. What have we got available that a hiker's going to appreciate and get to use?
Yeah, sure. So I think what we'll do today is maybe run through 3 different types of knives that I think would be perfect for the hiker. I guess the most fundamental part of any knife for a hiker is weight. So what I've done is chosen 3 very different sort of knives, but all very weight conscious and very weight specific. So obviously, when you're hiking, you obviously want to reduce your weight as much as possible. So I can run through those sort of knives. They're great price points. They're very easy to use. I think most of your listeners would obviously really enjoy looking at them and playing with them and obviously use them in the field.
Okay, so starting off from, I suppose, small to large, what have we got?
Yeah, sure. So we've got 2 knives here. I'll start with this one. This is called the Mini Paraframe. The Mini Paraframe is one of our most iconic products. It comes in 2 different options. It comes in what's called a combo blade or a 50-50 blade, which means half the blade's serrated and half the blade's a fine edge. So it gives the ability to cut things like rope and cord, paracord, that sort of stuff. But then there's also the plain edge as well. Personal preference. The knife's really easy to deploy. It's just a finger or a nail nick and it just opens up and then it's fully lockable. Super lightweight. It's all stainless steel and then it comes with an inbuilt pocket clip. These guys retail for $24.95.
Okay.
So fantastic little product, and we've been selling these in huge volumes for many, many years now. And it's one of our most, as I said, iconic and staple products.
All right, so next we're moving on to something. So the first knife we just talked about through there almost is got a bit of a skeletal sort of appearance.
It's called a skeletonized frame.
So from there we're starting to get up with something. It looks like it's got a bit more padding, a bit more, I won't say robust, but it's a bit more solid sort of handle.
Yeah, it's absolutely, yeah. It's called the STL 2.5. Obviously, it's full black, so it's got, I guess, first of all, a very different visual look, which obviously different people have different needs and wants and appeals to a product. So this is full black. Essentially, the design is stainless steel as well, but not skeletonized. So it's got a bit more of a robust feel to it, but still that similar size. And again, it's full locking, okay? The actual deployment's a little bit different. It's got this kind of thumb hole here, so it allows you to actually open the blade one-handed, and then it fully locks in, and then the liner lock obviously is just used like that, and it closes in. And again, the weight of this is super, super light. So it gives you the option of something really small, lightweight, but a little bit of a difference.
Now, with this one through here, it's a solid blade, right? It's no saw on the blade on this one?
No, that's correct. It's just what's called a fine edge blade. The previous version, the Paraframe, you can do both a combo blade with serrations or a pure fine blade. So 2 options with this guy, and then the STL, the black version, is just a fine edge only. Yeah.
All right, now we're moving up to a couple of, I won't say large knives, but larger knives compared. So we've got 2 ranges to talk about here. So what have we got in this next sort of sizing range?
Yeah, absolutely, Tim. So this is called the Zilch. So we launched Zilch probably about 18 months ago now. We launched it in 2 colours, a black and a red, in a stonewashed finish. It's I guess, a more traditional folding knife size. Fits really nicely in the hand. Again, the key here is weight, and where we sort of position these at a retail level is that really high volume,
it's available to, and you know, for most consumers, they're in that sort of $40 to $45 mark. So it's great value for money. Fantastic steel quality, and again, the way that you obviously want to deploy the blade is really simple. It's got a thumb stud, so holding the knife in your hand, just hold it with your index fingers and your thumb, and then just use your thumb to slide that open. And the blade then fits into place. It will lock in with this liner lock, and you're ready to go. Okay, and then to simply close the blade, you use your thumb and index finger, and that will go into its housing.
Okay.
Super lightweight, again, some colours. Again, has a deep set pocket clip. It also has a lanyard hole, so if you want to put a bit of paracord and tether it to something, you can do that. But again, ridiculously light. It's an unbelievable product, great value for money. So black and red, as you see in front of you there, were kind of the initial launch. We then had, in 2023, a third colour, which was what's called a Cody Brown. And the black blade, a lot of people do like the black, just a cosmetic appeal. And then this is a fourth colour now. So we've got four colours in the family of the Zilch. This is called Lichen Green. So it just gives consumers some more choice purely on colour. Amazing product. As I said, it's probably one of our biggest selling folding knives in our overall range right now.
So is it the brown one that only comes in the black blade, or you can get black blades across the range?
The brown is the only one with the black blade, yeah. So you kind of got the three handle colours, if you like. Black, red, green with a stonewash stainless, and then the Coyote brand with the black as a standalone.
Okay, and from there we're moving up to a knife that's similar, I suppose, in size, but it looks a bit chunkier.
Yeah, okay, so this is brand new for 2024. So once again, it's perfect for your hiking community. I guess, why is it different and why we're so excited about it? First of all, it's called the Mini Sada. The Mini Sada has a few differences. First of all, the handle material is now aluminium. So it's a step up in quality. Probably feels a little bit nicer in the hand. Again, personal preference. Aluminium scales. Also, the blade design is a little bit different to the Zilch. The Zilch, the paraframes and the STL, the folding knives I showed you previously, have what's called a drop point design. This is what's called a clip point. So the blade profile is a little bit different. Once again, all personal preference, no right or wrong. It just gives consumers a different sort of appeal and look of a knife. It also, I guess, one of its big points of difference is that the deployment of the knife can be done in two ways. You can use your thumb to then open the knife like so, but also it gives the ability for the knife to be actually deployed by your finger. So it's called a flipper.
Okay.
So it's nice and easy. It's a bit of a, not a gadget, certainly not a gadget, but the deployment of the knife is really simple and easy. And a lot of people who obviously like and carry knives and use knives for the right reason enjoy the mechanics of a flipper. So you can see how that obviously deploys, and it's really easy to open and close in one hand. It also has a deep set pocket clip and what's called a pinch plate in the back, which obviously gives you a more cosmetic appeal at the back there, and it allows the blade to lock using the mechanics through the frame here. Okay, this will retail around about that $69.95 mark. So it is a step up from the Zilch, but still really affordable. The steel quality and the handle material is just that sort of step up from the previous version.
Okay.
So look out for that to be launched this year.
All right. Now moving on from knives, let's go and have a bit of talk about some of the, I suppose, what's best described as multi-tools.
Yeah, absolutely. So obviously, Gerber is a gear company. We sell a lot of products. One of the big categories for us in Gerber is multi-tools. We've been making multi-tools for a long time. I guess what I wanted to do today was talk about products that are suited to the hiking fraternity. excuse me. So I guess the main one that I want to talk about is a product called the Armbar. The Armbar is a platform of multi-tools that we launched probably now about 3 or 4 years ago. And it was really, again, designed about lightweight. One thing that you'll notice straight away with the Armbar series is it doesn't have pliers. So it's really designed for consumers who don't need or have a purpose for pliers or jaws on multi-tools, but really want a feature-packed product that has a toolkit for the purpose of hiking or going outdoors without pliers. With Armbar, there's several different families, several different toolkits. You can get them in what's called the Armbar Slim. Really minimalistic. What does that mean? It means you get a knife blade, you get one-handed spring-loaded scissors, and of course, like any of our multi-tools, a bottle opener. Comes in various colours. These start around that $59.95 retail price point. Really cool. We then step up to the traditional Armbar, the first one that was launched all those years ago. There's two versions. One has a bit driver, so if you're looking at obviously using this for screwdrivers for flathead and Phillips head, it's interchangeable and it's a magnet system.
Okay.
So instead of having two different multi-tools in the bit driver, it's interchangeable. Scissors, awl, knife, all compacts down. Excuse me. You've also got a hammer on the end.
Okay.
Hmm. The newest version, excuse me, the newest version we've got is called the Armbar Scout. It's also got an added pocket clip. We had a lot of demand for our consumers. Why don't these have pocket clips? So what did we do? We obviously responded to our consumers, and we've now added a pocket clip to the new Armbar Scout. This one, as I'm showing you in front of you, is, again, a standard knife blade, but it's also got a can opener, one-handed scissors, and they've added a little saw. These come in a variety of colours, and these are $79.95.
Okay.
So the Armbar series, there's a variety of models, a variety of toolkits available, perfect for hiking.
Okay, and now the colour range, is that specific to the models, or yeah, there is a batch of colours across the whole range?
Batch of colours across the range, correct, yeah.
Okay. Okay, so that was the Armbar range, so what are we on to next?
Yeah, the last one I want to talk about is a model called the Stakeout. The Stakeout's a brand new platform for us, specifically for hiking and camping. So what it will give you is basically a profile that's got an inbuilt carabiner. And that allows you to obviously fasten the product, not just in your pocket, but on a belt loop or a backpack or something like that. So it's both carry and pocket. And the toolkit that you get with this is really, really unique. You get your standard knife and scissors, but you also get an inbuilt stakeout puller. So what this basically does is allows you to pull out really lightweight tent pegs with some more leverage rather than getting your hand or whatever it may be to get the tent peg out. So really unique that you haven't seen, or we haven't seen any other multi-tool on the market. You also get little tweezers. We're always getting splinters in our hands and fingers when we're going bush.
Yep.
And then just added things like a little file for sharpening, etc. There's even a ruler on there. So it's feature-packed, lightweight, with really, I guess, a toolkit that is built for the hiker. And that all folds down, everything locks, and away you go.
Okay, no, that's great.
That's called the Stakeout. There'll be more products to come in this family. It's a really new family for us, and we'll continue to build on this platform moving forward. So.
Okay, that's great. Okay, so we've been talking to Grant from Gerber, who, as we said, produce a huge range of tools. So thanks for taking the time to chat with us.
Tim, it's been my pleasure. Thank you very much.
Now, with our interview we just did for Gerber, we have actually dealt with Gerber products in the past, and they seem to be increasing their range quite dramatically. It's coming to Australia. So again, have a look at the photos in the show notes for this podcast. There's a huge number of tools that are available from Gerber, and some of them really aren't going to be much use for hikers. I mean, I don't think many hikers need axes and machetes.
Well, hopefully not.
Hopefully not. But certainly from a perspective of camping, they're quite useful tools. We talked to Gerber in particular about their range of smaller base tools that are geared more for hikers, or you just want a small tool, you don't want something fairly large. So while they had things like fold-down pliers and, as I said, machetes and saws and axes, the hiking style of tools, they were quite compact, quite useful. They had some good little tools on them. And certainly we are going to be looking at doing a podcast in the coming months on tools for hiking, and these tools will feature quite heavily in that because they really are a good little range.
Yeah, so there were some really interesting features that were in this range, and you know, when you see them you think, oh, they're pretty much the same in terms of multi-tool, but you know, one had a pair of tweezers that was concealed in the end. One had kind of a blunt end that you could use as a hammer, and another one had a long hook that popped out that you could use to remove your tent pegs. So, you know, they look the same, but they all had a range of different features. So, you know, and they were quite small and quite lightweight.
And quite inexpensive as well. You know, normally when you think about these multi-tool sort of products, you think, okay, these are going to be really expensive. And certainly the potential is there for the really full-on ones. But these ones were all under $100 from the ones we were looking at. And a lot, some of them were quite considerably under $100.
$40 to $50,
So they're quite a good little product for that.
and well made, obviously well designed, but, you know, great materials too.
Okay, so our next interview is with Dave Casey from Outdoor Agencies, and Dave is the product manager for Osprey Packs in Australia. Thanks for taking the time to catch up with us.
Good afternoon, Tim. Thanks for having me.
Okay, so we've talked to you previously, and Osprey is one of those companies that doesn't tend to sit still. It's always got something happening and something going on, and with the information you've provided me in the last week or so, there's some really exciting looking stuff coming up. So what can we expect from Osprey Packs in the coming season?
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, definitely the wheels keep on turning for Osprey, and I guess as generations of packs get updated every, four to five years, there's always something new to be replaced as well, or something new to add to the range as well. So I guess this winter, which launches next month, so this thing we talk about today will start to float into stores sort of in the next 3 to 4 weeks. There's definitely a focus on more bushwalking and day hiking over travel and other sort of activities. So it's definitely a good time to be chatting this time of the year.
Okay. Well, let's start off by having a look at some of the new ranges. So I believe there's a new Aether and Aerial Pro range.
Yeah, that's right. Aether Aerial Pro, the current soon-to-be superseded version, I think that got launched in 2018. So it's probably one of the oldest bags, if not the oldest bag in Osprey's range. And it's sort of come to this time of having an update. But to keep most people happy, it's definitely stuck to what it's traditionally has always been, that sort of lightweight, stripped back, keep it sort of simple bag design of less is best in some ways, but having a really comfortable harness. So a harness that's designed to carry up to 32 kilos at the upper end of the load limit, but sort of stripping the bag down to a clean, nice bag with only one entry through the top and one sort of zip tucked away underneath the storm flap for some sort of side entry. But apart from that, it's just a really stripped back sort of style bag, which is good, which you can also remove hoods and extra pockets to make it a nice, small bag as well, because they can go from sort of 75 down to, if you strip everything out, closer to sort of 55 or 50 litres.
Okay. Now, again, the Aether is the men's pack and the Aerial is the women's pack?
That's correct, yeah. And in this case, both share the same volume. So traditionally, the women's one will be a little bit smaller, but for this bag, they've gone down that avenue of being 75 litres for both genders as well, which is good.
Now, one thing I noticed looking at these bags, they only come in one colour by the look of it?
It is one colour. They're using a Nanofly fabric, which is a hard-wearing, very durable, tear-resistant fabric, but at the same time just keeping it nice and simple with that grey colour, silver lining. Photographers don't like it because it's a bit of a grey rock looking in the middle of a whole granite field in Kosciuszko, but at the same time it just keeps it nice and simple with the bag, which is, you know, too bright and leery. I think a lot of people, or some people, like just something a bit more simple.
Now, I must admit, looking at what's coming out of the States in the cottage industry and the long-distance hiking circuit, the grey seems to be the standard colour for long-distance hikers. So I think it seems to be flowing into the traditional packs more and more these days.
Yeah, exactly. Even the old version of the Aether Pro, it was sort of a grey sort of colour. I think it had a bit more pop, had a few red straps and a few blue straps. This one's just gone grey with grey, so it's sort of a very utilitarian coloured bag, which keeps it nice and simple. It doesn't stick out too much. If at all.
Now, the next range on the market, which is one I'm particularly familiar with, is the Talon and Tempest Pro. Now, these are quite a broad ranging pack, ranging from sort of 20 litres up to the 40 litre range. So they really are a day pack up to a small multi-day pack, I suppose you'd class them as. So what's new with this range?
Yeah, I guess they've sort of transitioned some of that technology that was in the previous one and, I guess, updated on the way. They all use now injection molded frame sheets, which adds some sort of stiffness and rigidity and makes the bag a really well-supported bag pack. The 40 litre, like you mentioned, is actually new to the range. So previously it was sort of closer to 30 and 20 volumes. Now that 40 litre bag gives you that sort of lightweight, overnight sort of style, alpinistic, if you want to go that avenue of a use. And then they've just sort of streamlined a bit more, made them a little bit more simple in their design and so forth. And also the 20 litre, they've done a really smart job of using that injection molded frame sheet, which is basically the frame sheet in the back of the bag to give the stiffness. But the way that the shoulder straps can adjust up and down, they adjust the yoke slides up and down that frame sheet. So it's sort of ruled out the need for a extra wire frame for that smaller litage, that 20 litage. So I sort of thought about how can we utilize that frame sheet, which is going to be there in the first place. We can add some rails to that and have the harness adjusting off that, which is, makes the bag a little bit lighter, but also a bit more stiffer, a bit more simple.
Now, as you said, the Talon Pro range tend to be in that sort of 20 to 30 litre range, and there was also used to be, and I don't know if there still is, is there a standard Talon pack, or is that now gone?
That's still there, yeah. So the Talon family, it's been one of the best-selling and most popular bags in the range for decades in a lot of ways. So that regular, if in inverted commas, Talon is still in the range. It runs from 6-litre bum bag all the way through to a 40-litre bag as well, and every 6 to 5 litres, there's a volume sort of slotted in there. So it's a massive range as well. But there's always been that want for having something a bit more either durable using nanofly fabrics or a bit more technical with some extra different style zips or a bit more streamlined, where that Pro comes into the range of someone with a bit more specialistic style of bag. So the original Talons and Tempest is still there. We'll be there forever.
So really the Pro range is more of the upmarket. It's got a better quality or a more durable quality fabric and more features than the straight Talon range?
Exactly, yeah. And it's slightly more comfortable, inverted commas, load capacity. So it's just the harness is designed to carry that weight a little bit more efficiently.
I must admit, it'll be interesting to see how they go, because I use 3 Talon packs, a Talon 20 Pro, which is my main day pack, and then I've got a Talon 33 and a Talon 36, I think it is, which is, yep. The 36 does me as a really good overnight hiking pack for up to about 4 days. And then I run out of space for food. All the rest of the gear fits there, but I run out of food space. But I think the 40 would be a really good multi-day pack, and I'd probably, yep. I think I'd almost get away with probably a week's worth of hiking out of a 40 litre pack for me. So it'd be interesting to see how that one goes.
No, exactly. As gear gets lighter and more compact, the volume in the bag can definitely get a little bit smaller, which is great.
Now, notice again with this range, they've got 2 colours. So we've got the silver again and also what they're calling Mars orange, which is a nice bright sort of fabric.
Yeah, exactly. I guess there's the grey for those who want to be blend in, and the complete opposite, someone who wants to pop and be seen or look good in photos. The Mars orange is there, there's the options there as well. And it's a good, sort of good mixture of all volumes and all colours to be found around the different stores in Australia as well, which is good to see.
All right, that's good. Okay, from there we move into what looks like a brand new pack for the Osprey range, and that's the Downburst. So what is the Downburst and what is so special about it?
Yes, so I guess the Downburst has been in design for around about 3 to 4 years now. The idea of having a fully waterproof backpack, but also something that carries like a bushwalking bag or a day hiking bag, is something that has been hard to find, if not impossible. There's lots of bags, basically dry bags with some shoulder straps tacked onto the side, which makes this stuff dry but not very comfortable. So we sort of started from scratch, or the design started from scratch, and basically took what was the Stratus and Cirrus, which is one of our most popular day hiking bags with a vented harness, and taken that harness and then have used a RF welded TPU laminate construction of basically a dry bag, which has been attached to a lightweight frame with a roll-down top and waterproof zips and so forth. It has some external pockets for shoving a water bottle and a rain jacket for easy access, and some pockets for bits and pieces. But once you sort of get inside that roll-down, it's IPX5 waterproof, which is non-submersible waterproof. So it's something that's not everyone needs, but those who bushwalk and do day hikes in undesirable or desirable, depending on what you like, weather in, I guess, Tasmania, New Zealand, or travelling overseas, is something that, you know, you can basically go for a day hike and not have to worry about dry bags, keeping things dry inside your bag. It's fully waterproof that way. It's great.
Now, looking at the range, there's a women's and men's range. They're slightly different. So the women's are a 24-litre size and a 34, and the men's is a 26 and a 36. Now, 34 and 36 is getting to, you know, potentially you'd get away for a 2 or 3 or 4 day sort of hike on that one if you're traveling light. So I must admit, I do like having packs that you don't have to use a pack cover on. They don't add extra weight, but I just find them an additional hindrance. So having a pack where you don't have to worry about getting everything wet is not a bad way to go.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's sort of, I personally agree as well. I don't like really using a pack cover. They can get torn off if it's scrubby or damaged or blown away in the wind or whatever it may be. So having something that you don't also have to worry about, having a dry bag inside, my old school thoughts might be I might keep my sleeping bag still in something that's still double waterproof just to be double sure that's waterproof, because that's probably my most important piece of kit.
Yep.
But apart from that, I would be more than happy to go hiking all day with a bag and pouring rain and know that at the end of it, unless I on a fallen river and go for a swim, it's going to keep my gear dry inside, which is, and when we sort of sneak peek late last year, mid last year, it definitely, for those who've seen it, pricked the most interest because it's something new and something very, very unique in the range as well in the market.
That's good. Now, the last one I want to talk about today is the Talon and Tempest Velocity, which again is another unique pack within the range, and this is classed as a fast packing pack. Now, what is the Talon and Tempest Velocity as far as the Osprey range is concerned?
Yeah, so I guess the Talon Tempest by name is when it got launched a number of decades ago. At the time, it was fast, lightweight, adventure racing, very active, very mobile sort of style bag. Over the years and time, the decades, it has sort of slowly become a bit more of a mainstream sort of style of day hiking or overnight hiking bag, depending on which sort of style you're looking for. So it's something that you can sort of just head off and go for a bushwalk and be happy. Where they've sort of taken the Talon Tempest Velocity back to its roots, they've sort of removed the injection molded frame sheet, which is a little bit stiffer, and popped a more traditional or more old school style Etalon foam frame sheet in the back, which gives a bit more softness and means you can sort of twist and move. And also it strips a lot of the features. So you've got no hood, you've basically got a compression strap on the top with a big shove pocket. And then the harness is pretty well a run vest sort of style harness. It has wider straps, wider hip belt, redesigned to hug the body, a bit of extra storage to store stuff in the front, but definitely designed to, and I go out, suffer for, depending on the volume, a few hours or a few days, and then come back and probably, be pretty tired the next day and recover. But by the time you recovered, you're sort of looking back and that was a fun, hard experience. So it's definitely for those sort of fast, light top hikers, but more of an active version than a through hiker, if that makes any sense.
I must admit, looking at them through here, they're 20 and 30 litre in both the Talon and the Tempest. They all of them weigh under 1 kilo, so they're light as far as a day pack is concerned, but they will cope with up to 11 kilos in carry weight, depending on the sizing or the structure of them. So, that's again, for one or two potentially nights, a 30 litre pack you might get away with, definitely for a night. And I just like the look of the shoulder straps. As you say, they've sort of almost created a hybrid between a run vest and giving you that extra storage. And that's always been the thing that's, for me, I've liked to have shoulder straps with somewhere you can actually put either a soft water bottle or put all your snacks for the day or put your phone or your camera in there rather than having to carry in the pants. And this one actually does that. So I think they've got a good potential, these packs.
Yeah, I think in reality, what the designers designed the bag for and the majority of the end users, I think a lot of people would probably use the bag more at how you described for a bushwalking, not quite as gnarly, adventurous, fast race, fast activity, but like that idea of how it's been stripped back and there's extra large storage and a really comfortable harness and a lightweight package will tick a lot of boxes for a more traditional bushwalker as well. So it's going to be interesting to see how it goes. Exciting. I guess another new pack which is added to the range, which is always exciting when there's new bags added to the range.
And I suppose one last thing it's worthwhile touching base on is that Osprey has come out with a range of bike packing packs and accessories this year. And has that been in the plan for a while, or is this was this a surprise to you as well?
No, I guess it depends on what overnight video calls are setting on 2 years ago. So I've known it's been coming for quite a while. I'm still what surprised it's taken as long. In Osprey's head office and part of the design team, there's a lot of bike packers in Cortez in Colorado where they're based. It's either a couple of hours south and you're in the deserts during winter, or a couple of hours north and you're in the Rocky Mountains during summer. So it's a really good hybrid position where they are of both summer and winter activities, depending on what you're doing. And bikepacking is huge within staff members there. So And also bikepacking as a, I guess, an activity has grown and grown. Australia is probably still a fairly immature market, where Europe and the US, bikepacking has been a thing that has been happening for decades. I guess we all think traditionally German backpackers in New Zealand with panniers in their bag, suffering up, I know, some paths, being overtaken by a Maui van. But nowadays, the bikepacking tends to be more lightweight, as outdoor equipment, tents and so forth, and a lot of, you can get more into your bike in a lighter package. So the escapist range, there's been an on-body pack for a few years now, and now there's that on-bike storage as well, which is new to the market this year.
No, that's good. I must admit, I haven't done a lot of bikepacking, but I have done some, and I'm amazed at how much gear I can actually carry once you end up with a handlebar pack, a frame pack, and then I've got a small set of panniers and a bag that sits on my my bar at the back, and I can pretty much fit what I carry in my normal pack in that, which is a surprise.
It's definitely more and more tent manufacturers, especially, are realizing that this is a market. I know Nemo, for example, they have a tent that's designed for bikepacking. The pole sections just fold a little bit shorter, so you're not sliding into a pack and putting in a backpack. It's sliding into a handlebar bag or a saddle bag, where you've got, I guess, less length can be in a pole as it folds down. So there's definitely, I guess, people have had lightweight tents and light sleeping bags and mats and so forth, and stoves and cooking. But there's definitely, it's a trend that's continuing to get larger and larger, both for that sort of, I know, hut accommodation sort of style of backpacking, or true backpacking with a tent and fully self-sustained. So it's definitely exciting to see Osprey joining that ranks.
Okay, now before we finish off, is there anything else you think we should mention about the Osprey range for the coming season?
No, I think we sort of covered, I guess, those key highlights. There's always some travel that's tucked in there and a few different bits and pieces, and as the seasons have continued over the last, I'd say, since 2020, 2021, Osprey's been using more and more, and a large percentage of the range has recycled fabrics in the pack bodies, and now we're sitting at close to 98% of the range will be 100% recycled content in the main body fabrics, and also looking at close to 99% of the range will be Bruce Line approved fabrics. So we're getting to that stage there where, apart from a handful of families that haven't been updated for the last probably 5 years, everything in the range is now either recycled content, Blue Sign approved, PFC removed DWR coatings, PFAS removed DWR coatings. So there's definitely a stronger push there to be that industry leader for packs, where we're sitting very close to 100% across all those sort of main benchmarks for sustainability, which is exciting to see as well, which is great for the environment and great for, I guess, the people that make the bags as well, factories and so forth.
So, as you said, they'll be in, most of these new packs will be into Australian stores, what, by the end of March?
By the end of March, I'd say, yeah, so they sort of start, they make their way to Australia now, and they'll be here. I think there's a small amount already in our warehouse, but we sort of go live with our winter season in early March. So as it gets to the stores, it may take a little bit. And then over the next following months, there'll be more of the range or more stock of that range added to it. So definitely all these packs we see will be in store soon, which is a good time for a sneak peek now, but also not too far away, so you can actually put on your back and head off.
Okay, and that's good. Okay, so we've been talking to Dave Casey from Outdoor Agencies about Osprey packs. Thanks for taking the time to chat with us.
Thanks a lot, Tim. Been great to chat to you.
And I always like catching up with Dave Casey. He's been the brand manager for Osprey in Australia for a number of years, and he's pretty passionate about the product and knows them really well. So in that interview, we discussed a few revamps to some of the ranges. So the Osprey and Aerial packs have now been upgraded, and that's always the way. You know, they've taken a very popular, very long-lived pack and just continue to improve it. For me, I find the packs just a bit on the larger side. I prefer to travel a bit lighter and a bit smaller where I can, even for long trips. And for people who like the more traditional style of packs, they certainly are a really good pack and well worth considering and will cope with quite heavy loads. Osprey Tempus and Talon Pro packs, they've been for us a
pack range that has been our favorite for our day hiking for a number of years, and they will continue to be so in the next couple of years, and certainly we'll be looking at swapping over to the new packs as soon as the new stock arrives. They just are a really lovely pack that works really well. The new Downburst pack, you sort of think, it almost sounds like a sleeping bag with the name, but it's a pack, it's a day pack that's not just a waterproof pack, but it's a waterproof pack that's been built on decent construction. They haven't just taken a waterproof bag and put a poor quality harness on it. They've put a really good quality harness on it from one of the pre-existing pack range, and put a waterproof structure on it that, while it won't cope with being submerged, if it's raining, it's going to keep everything dry, which means you're not having to deal with pack covers, which is handy sometimes. Other range that we thought was really interesting, and again, it's a bit of a weird one, is the Talon and Tempest Velocity range. And this is a what's classed as a fast pack, and it's aimed really at people who are into running, but running long trails, if you like. So, you know, if you're doing a trail run that, you know, you do need a pack for, this is what this has been aimed at. So it's taken the features off running packs and combined it with a hiking pack. And I just love the look of what was on there. I mean, they're definitely a quirky looking pack with the wide shoulder straps that have come, the DNA has come from the running industry. And I think that I will be really interested in seeing how this one goes. I will be testing this one out over the next couple of months, and I think it has some nice features on it. And so, and it's again, for a lot of people, they might find it a bit quirky, but what it's designed for, if you're into fast packing, which is essentially fast hiking, if you like, and hiking where you potentially even run, this is a good option and a good alternative. We finished off that interview with talking about their environmental credentials. And Offspray continues to improve what they're doing to minimize their environmental impact as much as they can. So this is certainly a big trend within the outdoor industry and something that's good to see. Okay, so that's all for this week's episode. In next week's episode, we'll finish off the remainder of the interviews. We will have a few product overviews, is probably the best term for it. There were some brands that I wasn't able to actually interview, but I got to have some hands-on touch and feel with to see what it was like. So we'll talk about some of that new product that's coming onto the market, but we didn't get a chance, as I said, to interview the suppliers for this one. We'll finish off next week's episode spending a bit of time talking about where the industry's heading. The more I go to these trade shows, the more I read and keep an eye on the industry, there are some definite patterns in where the outdoor industry and the hiking industry is heading. And we'll go through and discuss what they are, just to finish that off for this series of two podcasts. Okay, we hope you've enjoyed this episode. Again, this is one of our more popular episodes of the year. People are always keen to find out about what new products is coming through and what's around. That's all for me. Bye for now.
And bye from me.